Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the May 2022 Home Education Conference held in Morristown, Tennessee.
My name is Nicole Freeman, and this class is Creating a Home Library. The one thing I wasn't sure of is what this space would look like. This is my first time here, and for an interior designer, space really matters. And so I had to kind of create a space in my mind as to what I wanted it to look like, and then be able to adapt, because it's different than what I imagined. I'm grateful for our backdrop, the nice cozy fireplace here, which is helpful for my attempt to create a home environment. So on the tables spread out, there's more books than people. And because I'm so passionate about books, I just didn't know which ones to choose. And I almost wanted to bring all of them, but these are just a few. And I'm glad that you're here and hope that you are just as passionate about books and your home as I am. As gateways to knowledge and culture, libraries play a fundamental role in society. The resources and services they offer create opportunities for learning, support, literacy, and education. And they help shape the new ideas and perspectives that are central to a creative and innovative society. When I first moved to a place, the first place I go is the public library. And at one point where we lived, there were 6 public libraries in a very close range. And I went to all 6 with my 6 children. We all got library cards from all 6, and we made it a point to visit those libraries on a regular basis. So each library presented something different. Each one had aspects that we liked that maybe another library didn't have. And then there were some things that I thought, if only they had this. And there were times when I thought, oh, if this library could get with that library and put those things, 2 things together, this would be amazing. And so what I found is that visiting different libraries has been very helpful because it's helped me to identify things that I like and things that maybe I don't like, or things that I appreciate and things that I don't appreciate. And so I would encourage you, if you don't already, is to visit your local library. Now, when we talk about home, it's a place that we either permanently or temporarily live or occupy. And it's a space that can be for a few or many. It can also be an interior space, or it can be an exterior space. And for our family, we have sort of a traveling library and a traveling home, per se. Wherever we are, that's where our library is. Wherever we are, that's where home is. So when we've gone camping, we've created a home space and our books are with us. When we are in a hotel, if we're at a friend's house, wherever we may be, I've tried to bring those 2 aspects with us. And the flip side of that is wherever we've gone, I've tried to bring things back home. And so this idea of going and coming, and that at all times we are in this framework or mindset of sharing what we have, and then taking the things that others have to share with us and then bringing it back home. So what I would like to do at this time is share with you. And in the dictionary, which I have back there on that table that no one is near, there's the definition of share, noun and verb. And here's the noun: a part or portion of a larger amount which is divided among a number of people, or to which a number of people contribute. Now the verb of share, have a portion of something with another or others. So we're going to take a moment to share. What I'd like to do is I'd like you to get up and walk around to the books, okay? If there's a book near you. And I'd like you to take a moment and look through the books. I have to admit that some of them may have some personal notes in there. I'm not too personal, so I don't think it's going to embarrass anyone or myself. I want you to find something that you can share. Maybe a sentence, a paragraph, a picture. So please take a moment. I want to share my books with you, and then I'd like you to find something to share with us. I'll give you a minute, 60 seconds. Okay, has anyone found anything? Jen, will you come up and share with us, please? Oh, if you will, tell us the title and the author.
So this is Organized Simplicity by Kish Oxenreiter. And she's talking about here her family's purpose statement. It says, as a family, we want to glorify God in all we say, do, and are. We will put each other first, cultivate deep relationships with one another, extend love to those around us, live simply, be true to who God made us, take care of our health, be good stewards of creation, and be lifelong learners.
Perfect. Thank you. Now I'm going to ask you a question. You can still walk back or you can stay. But why did you pick up that book?
It was in the basket on the table.
Okay, it was on the back of the table. All right. Good enough. Okay, who has something else they'd like to share? Thank you.
This is The Secret Garden, and I was interested in it because you can't find many editions nowadays that have the colored pictures. So I'm really excited about this. But I just flipped to the part where Mary's asking questions about Colin. She says, Mother says there's no reason why any child should live that gets no fresh air and doesn't do nothing but lie on his back and read picture books and take medicine. He's weak and hates the trouble of being taken outdoors, and he gets cold so easy it makes him ill. Mary sat and looked at the fire. I wonder, she said slowly, if it wouldn't do him some good to go into the garden and watch things grow. It did me good. And I just love that part because it exemplifies my desires as a homeschooling mom to get my children fresh air and sunshine and beautiful literature. And I just think that children innately know the beauty of that. And I really love that and want to instill that in my kids. So as many of these good pieces of literature as I can get for them, I want to.
Thank you. You're welcome. Thank you. I can tell that she reads. Her expression, the intonation in her voice, all of that makes it so interesting and makes it come alive. It makes me want to go home and open up that book and start reading it again. Okay, who else? Yeah, please.
Okay, I picked up Anna Bosford Comstock's Handbook of Nature Study. I have four boys who love to go outside, and one of them who, especially, of all of them, but one especially who is obsessed with outside and everything that he finds. And I've been trying to slow down and let him look and then be interested in what he finds. So I thought this would be a good one to look at. And I flipped it open, and a couple of pages in, I found a crayfish that I think they're just so gross. They're so ugly and they're so gross. And so I thought, okay, maybe if I learn more about the crayfish, I'll think they're less gross. So I looked at it. Just part of the interesting information about the icky crayfish is that they have multiple pairs of legs. So I'll just read interesting stuff about their legs. They have between and above the great pincers, their big nasty ones in the front, is a pair of short, small legs tipped with single claws and fringed on their inner edges. These are the maxillipeds, or jaw feet, and behind them, but too close to be seen easily, are two more pairs of jaw feet. As all of these jaw feet assist at meals, the crayfish apparently always has a three-fork dinner. And as if to provide accommodations for so many eating utensils, it has three pairs of jaws, all working sideways, one behind the other. Three pairs of feet that feed the three jaws, and that made me laugh because I feel like all my boys are always eating. So it just reminded me of my kids always eating.
Very good. Thank you so much. So whenever there's a need that our children have, I tend to go to books to help me to facilitate either helping them to learn or to foster their interest or to help me keep up with what they are interested in learning. So thank you for sharing that. Okay, someone else. Yes, please.
This one's a picture book. I love picture books so much. I especially like the artwork, and this one was fun because there's like zero words. The only words in this one are like sound effects, like when the little boy zips up his zipper, we get like zip, and when they take a picture, we get click. And the art is gorgeous. I think my favorite page was this one, where the father and the son are hiking, and they get to a big log that is crossing the stream, and the father goes across, and he looks back, and the little boy's really nervous, like, I'm gonna fall. And you get this really sweet picture of the dad reaching out, and we get the dad's hand and the boy's hand, and the dad helps the little boy across, and it's just really cute. Love picture books.
Thank you. One of my favorite things about picture books that don't have words is it gives me the opportunity with my child to create the words, and we have this dialogue. And even if we have looked through that same book more than once, it's a different dialogue each time. Sometimes it reflects on the things that we did that day, or we did last week, or a memory that we have, or the last time that we read it. And so the other aspect of books is that they're interactive. I don't think they're meant to be just for one. And oftentimes we read a good book and we just want to share it. Like, oh, have you read this book? And I, in my collection of books, a lot of them are books that friends suggested or asked if I read, and I'm like, no. And I never would have thought to read them had it not been for them. So continue to share, it's important. Anyone else? Yes.
So I picked up this book because I'm a musician. I really enjoy teaching my kids piano lessons and voice lessons. And so I saw this book about Yo-Yo Ma, and you know, Yo-Yo Ma is a musician that a lot of people are familiar with because he seems like he's everywhere. He's always making a recording or doing a concert or, you know, doing something different and unique, you know. And I really like the same phrase came up several times, sentence came up in the book. It said, feet planted on the soil of one nation, eyes gazing at the shores of another, right? Where he's creating music, he was born in France but raised in the United States. He has this Italian instrument. You know, it talks about all these different aspects of his life that are international and multicultural. And I just love that because, you know, I think the homeschool world is really striving to open our children's eyes to, you know, everything all over the world. And this is like a great way. And I think it also speaks to like just the principle of like being in the moment, being fully present, engaged in the present, but also looking toward the future.
Thank you very much. That was much more input that I could give you on music. Thank you so much for sharing that. My children play the violin, and our violin instructor, she has a requirement that they have a special listening every week. And so they have to listen to a professional recording of any type of music that's produced. And then they have to write down the composer, the title of the piece, what time period it was composed. And in that, our world of music has just opened up. And before this class, or I'm sorry, before these lessons with this particular teacher, I did not know who Yo-Yo Ma was. And now I do, and I think, what would my life be like if I didn't know Yo-Yo Ma? And so I feel that it is enriching, and I'm a better person because I know who he is. And we go places and we see his name or hear his name, and it's a connection. It's a connection that we immediately have with other people. And so when he talks about being on the shore and looking onto another, it's, again, another way to connect and to reach out to others and share. Okay, I know there's more that want to. Yes.
So I didn't end up actually reading anything really much in this book, but it's called Blue Mind, and I was drawn to it because I love water and I like neuroscience. That's like my hobby. And just the subtitle, The Surprising Science That Shows How Being Near, In, On, or Underwater Can Make You Happier, Healthier, More Connected, and Better at What You Do. And then on the back it says, water attracts and fascinates us, and we know instinctively that being near it reduces stress, increases creativity, and brings us peace. Now Wallace J. Nichols reveals a wave of research that's illuminating water's powerful effects on our bodies, minds, and souls. And just think about when you go to the lake or to the beach or something, we're grounded. It changes us, like our body chemistry, to be grounded. And that's why it's so refreshing when we're out in water. And like showers, they have the negative ions and stuff, or if we're near fountains. And I'm excited, I wrote this down, I'm gonna get a copy of this, because I love when things that we experience, we find that there's scientific principles for them, because I like to collect principles. And so I'm grateful that you made me aware of a new book. So thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. I will take anyone else that wants to share. Yes, please.
So, yeah, I grabbed this book because I'd actually heard about it. It's called Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and I heard it's good. And I think one of the first things I read was like about how this book wasn't an immediate success and that it took him a while. None of the publishers wanted to publish because they didn't like his take on things. But now it's like a top seller in financial books. So. Even if you're not going to a book for a certain topic, like persistence or whatever, you're going to look for financial advice, which persistence does help with that, but you can reap lots of different things from any book. And then as far as the financial advice, it says, the increases in income are going to entrepreneurs and investors, not to employees, not to people who work for money. And I found that very interesting.
Thank you. So I'd like to tell you how I grouped my books here today. And I'll start right here. The books in this container are all field trip inspired. So we have a tradition, and when we go on a field trip, I will purchase a book. And I will only purchase it if it's quality and if my children approve. I do override them sometimes. But I want to bring something back that will be in our home that we can refer to. It's impossible for us, at least, when we go somewhere, to take in everything. And sometimes when I purchase a book and bring it home, we read it and then we're like, oh, I didn't even know that when we were there. I wish I would have known that before. But it's okay, at least we know it now. And if we ever have the opportunity to go back, then we look for that. And it helps us to kind of dive deeper. And it's not just a surface level. So all the books here are field trip inspired. We went to the National Building Museum in Washington, D.C. and went to an exhibit. And this is the exhibit was by Amy Davis. And so there was a book that she wrote. She's a photographer, and it's called Flickering Treasures. Flickering Treasures, Rediscovering Baltimore's Forgotten Movie Theaters. Now, before this, I never would have been interested in the forgotten movie theaters of Baltimore. But I will tell you that after going through the exhibit and going through her book, as we drive around our own city, my children and I will yell out, there's this, and we'll call them by name, and remember that, that's in the book. And it really has given us a deeper understanding and appreciation for the city that we live in, and these true treasures that are lost. And sometimes it's sad when you see the condition that they're in now, and that they're not, and in their heyday, how magnificent they were. And so that was a gem that we found. Okay, I'm not going to go through all of them, but I am going to go through some of them. This is our classics, and there are so many more that I consider to be the classics. We have family favorites, and in this book here, there are lots of children's books. The Seven Silly Eaters, which is a fun one that we love to read time and time again. Bad Case of the Stripes, if you're not familiar with that one. And this one is really interesting because I was in a bookstore with my daughter and we were just going through the shelves and she said, "Mom, I can't believe we don't have Eloise." She's 17. And so we bought the book and we brought it home and we have Eloise on our shelf. And I couldn't believe we didn't have it before either. I love the outdoors and so I have a collection of outdoors, music, Irish, because I'm 23% Irish, so we have a collection there. The point that I want to make is that I would encourage you to put books in your library that you feel passionate about and that are personal to you. When people come into my home and they see my bookshelves, we almost always have a conversation about the books. And there, I always find something on my shelf that is related to someone, or there's a question, or an interest. And so I really feel like these books are more than just items on a shelf in my home. It's a way to help others. It's a way to reach out. Sometimes it's a comfort, and it can also be that source of joy, and it allows us to share. You can organize your books however you want. And I'm sure that if you do have a library at home, you do have a way. I've seen a multitude of ways of organizing: colors, size. I haven't seen ISBN numbers yet at home. Books don't have to be all in one place. I would suggest that they're scattered throughout the house in different locations and different ways. So up here, I have a chair, and I often have found a child sitting in this chair with a book. I have a blanket here, nice and cozy, and I often find a child wrapped up in a blanket on the sofa with a book. On the floor, in their rooms, on the deck, on a blanket outside, any place can be a book nook or a place to enjoy a good book. And I want to encourage and foster that, and so I try to come up with as many creative ideas and ways to do that. So let's talk about that in our home. These are some of the components that, from interior design, I think are crucial. So, as a designer, whenever someone asks me to help them with a design problem, because that's what I do, I solve problems, I'm not there to tell them what to do, I'm just there to steer them in the right direction and try to avoid them doing something that is not going to be productive. But I do have some core principles that I like to work from. So, natural light. For me, the very best type of light there is natural light. And if I could have a home that was open to the outdoors all the time and it didn't affect my allergies and there wasn't open to the elements and things, I would. But natural light, I think, is the best type of light to have. And so your libraries, your homes, should have as much natural light as possible. And if you've been to public libraries, you may not know it, but the ones that are most inviting and the most comfortable are those that use natural light in a productive way. Windows. A book nook or a place to read near a window seems to be attractive, whether it gives you a moment to pause and look outside and think and ponder, or just to be able to feel the sun or to see the rain or hear the rain, or my children love to watch thunderstorms. It's just a way to connect with the outside if you can't be outside. So windows are very important and I think should be incorporated. Something that's cozy and intimate. Just a small space really does the trick. And I've had a little teepee in a room. I've had just a beanbag, a corner with pillows and a blanket. but something nice and cozy and intimate. The blanket really helps, and something soft to land on. Warmth. I don't know about you, but I don't like to be cold. I love the cold, but I don't like to be cold. So that's why something that's warm tends to be inviting. Not hot, but warm. Food and drink. If you're like my children, you will skip food and drink if you are in a good book. And so it's nice to have a space where they can bring food and drink too, so that they can read for as long as they possibly can. That's one drawback to public libraries at times when you're not allowed to bring food or drink in, and it can be a distraction to others. However, at home, food and drink is always allowed. A clean environment, something that's not cluttered, and a space that is clean is inviting, and I think that it fosters positive thoughts. Creative. I wasn't able to bring any larger prints with me, but artwork, I think, is very important in our home, and I just have this from Norman Rockwell. But having artwork and different types of art in your home, whether it's by professionals or your up-and-coming professionals in your home, that is inspiring and should be displayed in any way that you can find a way to do that, whether it's on the refrigerator or on the wall with some painter's tape, it doesn't matter. I think that just getting it up there, something that they can see, and especially when it's from them, it gives them that sense of ownership that they're part of that space and that they have a contribution. I know that there are things that my children have done when they were really little, and when I display their artwork, they come back to it, and the funny things that they say that they were thinking about as that they were creating that, it just promotes conversation and growth, because they see where they were and thought, oh, that's when I couldn't even draw this, and that's what it looked like. Anyway, it's a moment that encourages them to want to further their abilities. Historical value and architectural details. A home, if it's built correctly, doesn't really have to display a lot. The architectural details really speak for themselves. So a sound structure or space is all that's needed. You don't really have to embellish it. If you've been into a library and you see columns, if you see soaring ceilings, or the way that the space is organized, it speaks for itself. And so many times we want to add things to a space, but really if we kind of pull the layers back and see what's already in place and try to let that be dominant, then we realize we're actually just accentuating the positive that's already there. So don't overlook the architectural details that are already present in your home. The historical value has twofold. If you have family photos, those are great to display, to have a piece of your history in your home. It could be journals, it could be any type of records that comes from or represent where you come from. That is also valuable, and it should be displayed, not just on a shelf where you see the binding, and you may need to find creative ways to do that. And then my last point is that your books should be accessible. Our main library has a children's area, and it's a beautiful children's area. However, when you walk into the library, you have to kind of snake through a back staircase to the basement and through another set of hallways to get to the children's library. And when after the renovation, I was so disheartened over this, that they would tuck away the children's library in the basement in this space. And even though the space itself is wonderful, I just felt that it wasn't as accessible to our children, our young children. And so in your home, think about that. Are you making your library accessible? Is it someplace where you can easily get to, not tucked away in a corner or in a dark place that you have to go to? When you're in a public library space, I think if you've ever taken notice of where the children's library is, the ones that are most inviting are the ones that are open and sort of say, come on in, here we are, and you don't really have to go looking for them. Here are some additional things that are just more technical. Find your dedicated space. So if you don't have a library already, or if you're thinking about redoing your library, start small. Find a dedicated space that you want to say, okay, we're going to create a space here for all of us to read in. So that's number one. Find a dedicated space. Check out your storage options. So you can have anything from a bookcase to a crate, a basket. There's lots of ways to store your books. So don't limit yourself to a bookcase. Like, oh, I'm just waiting for that day when I'll have a whole wall of shelves that I can display our books on. Don't wait. Just start now. And even if it's a bag, put the books in. Or I have actually used my dining room table. And when I go to the library, if I come home with books, I will put the books on the dining room table, opened up like this. And without fail, it may take them a while, but my children will find their way and they'll sit down and they'll thumb through it. And sometimes they'll do it when I'm not looking, because I always bring home the children's books. But I find that they love them, and so I bring them home and set them up. So the comment that Joe made is that using rain gutters that you can put on the wall at lower levels for children that are smaller is a great way that you can display books and make them accessible to young readers and older readers, depending on what level you put them in. Thank you. I already mentioned the fact of stock up with the books that matter to you. So I have a main section and a moose section. I think this is the moose section right here. So I collect books about moose. I lived in Maine for 7 years, and that's just my thing. I also like to collect Christmas books, so I have a whole collection of Christmas books. The outdoors, that one is growing. Donate or sell what you don't want or need. I kind of struggle with this one because I think, well, if I don't want to read it, or if I don't think it's a good book, I don't want to give it to someone else. However, I've tried to open up my mind and think, well, just because I don't appreciate it, someone else may appreciate it for another reason. And so don't let your book sit on a shelf and be neglected when there's someone out there in the world that could benefit from it. So sell or donate those that you don't want. Focus on your display. So again, being able to show those books. As I was getting ready for this presentation, I had books all over the dining room table and kitchen. And one of my daughters, she was picking up books and reading them as I had them out. And my son was picking up books and reading them as I was like, can you wait? And I had to refrain to tell them not to move the books, but I just let them. And I thought, wow, they haven't even thought about these books, you know, for the past 6 months or so, and now that I have them out and they can see them, they are jumping into them. And that was really, that warmed my heart, and I was grateful for that. Create the right seating arrangement. Again, this is just, it doesn't take much. It can be a chair, it can be a grouping of chairs, your family room. It just needs to be a place that's cozy, something that's inviting and welcoming that people will want to come to. Layer your lighting. Again, lighting is so important, and outside of what the actual space looks like, I think lighting is key. So I have here in this space, we have lighting up above us, and so this is sort of like your ambient lighting, it's your general lighting. Then we have task lighting, which this desk lamp would be task, and if I had, yep, it, because you're doing a specific thing and you want to make sure that the space is lighted for that, whether it's working on whatever it is you're working on at a desk. And then you have accent lighting, which if you have artwork on your walls, you see in public spaces where the lighting is projected onto that specific focal point. Lighting, I can't speak enough about it. Too many of our homes are underlit. And so if you need to add some more lighting, do that, and it improves your space tenfold. It's nice to have a lamp either right above or right next to your space of where you're reading. I also have these when we're camping, if my kids are in the car or van. I know some kids can't read while in a moving object, but I like to provide headlamps for my kids if they're reading at night. I also have a flashlight that we regularly keep in the van or in the house if anyone needs it. So lighting. And then again, we already talked about create a system, however you want to organize your books. My kids organize and reorganize the books quite often. And at times they'll be like, who organized the books? Because then they'll go to the shelf and they can't find the book that they're looking for. And then there's a conversation of, well, I put it over here because these books are in this area. And I think that that's good for them because then they know what we have and where it is. So I'm not the only person that organizes the books in our home. My kids have taken that responsibility on as well. And they did that on their own. I didn't give that assignment.
Nicole?
Yes. Yes, please.
So Thomas Jefferson Education, they have bookshelves where they have like the board books down at the bottom and then graduated like that. But they have them all mixed. And they said that kids will think, oh, I just like this kind of book, and so sometimes they'll only look in that area. But if they're rifling through some that are all mixed together, they'll discover friends that they didn't even know were in there. So sometimes it can be a good thing to reorganize or have someone sort of disorganize.
Okay, so the comment was that Thomas Jefferson Education organizes their books where they have board books lower, and then they also intermingle the books together so they're not sectioned off. And it gives the children opportunities to, as they would go to a book that they would naturally be interested in, there might be a book right next to it that they're not thinking about, but then they find what they're interested in. So it's an opportunity to help them expand their interest. I actually have a Thomas Jefferson book somewhere here in this space. That's actually where I got my classics list from. That's where I started with. And I actually made a copy of it because my original is kind of tattered as I've kept it, and I check off the books that I've been collecting. That's a very good suggestion. Okay, with the last few minutes that we have, beyond books, I have checkers up here on the floor. There's so many things that a library provides outside of books. Music, art, crafts, learning skills. I was going to bring my sewing machine, but I think this is enough. Learning about different cultures and people. And so, again, I can't encourage you enough to visit your public libraries. When you're traveling, visit the libraries that are in that area so that you can see and get ideas and be inspired. I hope that today, even as we were reading, that you found something that inspired you. Or as we've been talking, you've been able to write down or feel something that inspired you, something to go home and do, something to change or add or incorporate. And that can be the focus, that our homes can be and should be libraries that provide service, that build skills, that encourage learning and growth, and that also it's a place of acceptance where there's no judgment. For a long time, I kept certain books out of our home because I didn't want a particular influence. And I have allowed some books in that maybe I wouldn't naturally choose, but through careful consideration. It didn't go against any of our morals or anything like that. I found that it was okay to allow in. And so it takes more than just you. It takes talking to other people who have more of an in-depth knowledge about things that can help you see the benefit or the good that is related in certain books. And then also there have been books on my shelf that someone's like, oh, you have that book? And then I thought, oh, I didn't know that about that book. And so it's helpful to share that information as well. I think there's just a minute or two, and so I'd like to hear if you have any comments or questions, things that you would like to share.
One of the things I'd love to hear about for the youth book is how we go to a lot of the Mennonite stores.
Mm-hmm. Bookstores will have sales like 2 or 3 times a year, and we can get books 60 cents to a dollar, and it's these kinds of books. It's the And the challenge these days is that a lot of the libraries near us anyway have changed from these amazing books to things that are a lot different, a lot more fluff. And so we made it a priority to have these in our home library. And those sales places have been where we can do it. And so I would encourage you to look for places like a lot of the Mennonite bookstores. I know Hagerstown, Maryland has one. And this weekend, in fact, is their book sale where they have, you know, the melon boxes, right? They have one full of that and then an empty one and a whole warehouse full. So you go in and you just start sorting and you find the books that you want. And so that's one of the ways that we've been able to build a library like this.
Very good. Thank you. I'm glad that that was brought up. One thing I do want to mention is that in our libraries, they often give books away during the summer reading program. And I haven't always appreciated the books that they give away. And I have spoken to some librarians and thought, these are our children, and I want to give them books that have substance. You mentioned the word fluff, books that have fluff. And so I'm very, very particular about the books that we add to our library for good reason, because I believe in quality, not quantity, and I want to expose my children to all the good. There's so much good in the world. I feel that there's really no need for us to put anything less than the best in our homes and in our libraries. All right, well, thank you so much for allowing me to be here with you today. Go forth, read, and I hope that your libraries continue to grow and expand and meet the needs of your family. Thank you.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.